Hello and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. This week we have one of radio's favorite hard-boiled detectives, Johnny Dollar. The two shows we selected star Edmund O'Brien as America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, the man with the action-packed expense account. First, we have an investigation of the murder of a wealthy Connecticut blue blood, and the second show we chose is about murder in a Union Steel mill in Pittsburgh. Enjoy yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Murder of Loyal B. Martin, first broadcast February 3rd, 1950 on CBS.
I'm now for Edmund O'Brien as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Edmund O'Brien, starring in another adventure of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At Insurance Investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he's an absolute genius.
Expense account, submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Great Columbian Life Insurance Company. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during the investigation of the circumstances surrounding the murder of your policyholder, Loyal B. Martin, or how to take a vacation in Fairfield County. Expense account, item one. $3.20, mileage from Hartford, Connecticut, to the country estate of the deceased. I drove up a long cement driveway toward the mausoleum-type manor house. There were rolling green lawns liberally sprinkled with statuary. And the thought occurred to me that if he had spent much of his life here, the late Mr. Martin was most fortunate. He'd feel right at home in a cemetery.
Yes?
My name is Dollar. I'm here to see Mrs. Martin.
Oh, yes. Mrs. Martin.
Uh-huh.
I'm afraid I'll have to disappoint you. The widow has gone shopping the day after the death of her husband. Something attractive in morning clothes, I'm sure.
Well, what time is she expected back?
I have no idea. But it shouldn't be long.
Do you mind if I come in and wait?
You'll forgive my asking, young man, but just what is your business here at Loyal Haven?
I was sent here by the insurance company.
Oh, why, yes. Well, then do come in. Here, right in here. I'm Mrs. Tompkins, the housekeeper, Mr. Dollar. I was with Mr. Martin for over 30 years. He was a wonderful man.
This furniture also looks like it might have been with Mr. Martin for over 30 years. Victorian, isn't it?
Yes. Pure. Loyal. Mr. Martin, that is, was an expert on the Victorian period. Please sit down.
Thank you.
Mr. Dollar, I suppose you'll think it's indelicate of me at this time, but about Loyal's insurance, his policies, did they...
Yes, Mrs. Tompkins, they did. One of his policies leaves you a nice, sizable amount. But before you start counting it, maybe you and I had better have a little understanding.
Yes?
Well, I'm not here to represent the payoff department. I'm here to investigate the murder.
Oh, well, I see.
Yes, before the company pays off, they want to make sure that among the beneficiaries, they don't pay off the murderer, because they really don't have to do that.
Oh, I didn't realize.
No, neither do a lot of people. You know, that's the way quite a few good murders are wasted.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Well, if that's what you're here for, I suppose you'll want to talk to the police. Lieutenant Marquardt is in the library. That's where it happened.
Oh, library, huh? Well, that might help. If I can't find any other answers, I can always try looking some up in a book. Which way do I go?
The door, just across the hall.
Thank you. And what a hall. The only thing missing was old Queen Victoria herself. Even the musty odor clinging to the green velvet seemed to have been passed down through the centuries. There was a brace of moth-eaten pheasants on the wall and a bouquet of moth-eaten flowers under glass on a marble-topped side table. The library was the same, but there were three things that looked out of place. A, an old suit of armor. B, a glass case filled with new, well-polished sporting rifles and shotguns. And C, a very gruff-looking lieutenant of the police who eyed me as I came in.
And who are you?
Oh, here's my little breath saver.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Dollar. He told me you'd be here. Well, I've told everybody else, I better tell you, don't touch anything. They want to re-fingerprint the whole room.
Okay. What'd you find, Lieutenant?
Nothing but the cadaver with two bullet holes in his back. Haven't got a caliber report from ballistics yet.
Have you an estimated time of departure?
Yeah, the coroner says Martin died after dinner last night.
Uh-huh. Anything to go on?
Just the usual. Faith, hope, and suspicion. His wife, too young and too pretty for an ugly old buck like Martin, must have married him for his money. Then there's that housekeeper, Sarah Tompkins.
Yeah, I met her on the way in.
Well, she used to be the old man's intended, from what I can find out. Probably jealous of the young wife. Then there's the brother, Marty. He showed up a few weeks ago, broken, brooding. Probably in love with the young wife. And then there's Nick Bellotti, a private detective who hired himself out as Martin's bodyguard.
Bodyguard, huh? No doubt also in love with the young wife.
Could be.
Who's your choice?
Except for the fact that there are only two bullets, I think they all did it.
The nose through which Lieutenant Markwood talked was a long one, and in more ways than one, a horn of plenty. For out of it had poured enough motives and suspects to furnish a dozen murders. I started through this cast of characters and found that all of them had very little to say and didn't want to say it. The first I dug up was the bodyguard, my brother investigator, Nick Bellotti, as he returned from a horseback ride.
Glad to have you on the case, Dollar. The police have tied my hands. They told me to stay out of it, but to stick around.
Have you got any ideas?
Everybody seems to think it was an inside job, that somebody in the household did it. I'm not so sure. The reason I was around was because old man Martin made too many dollars and too many enemies doing it. But that's only my opinion. Why don't you talk to the old boy's younger brother, Marty?
I found Marty living the life of Riley. He was upstairs in his room, cuddled up to a 20-year-old bottle of brandy, which was still underage to be around the kind of book he was reading.
Yeah, I'll tell you something, Dollar. My brother and I never did get along. Yeah, you'd find that out anyway.
Why'd you come back here, Marty?
Because Loyal's little bride, Joy Ann, sent for me. She was afraid of him, and she didn't know if he was on to her.
Was he?
About that, you'll have to talk to Joy Ann.
Joy Ann didn't get home until 3:00 in the afternoon. I caught up with her 20 minutes later as she came dripping out of the swimming pool. The suit she was wearing would have gotten her pinched on the Riviera.
Oh, that was refreshing.
It certainly is.
Oh, toss me that towel, will you?
Yeah, surely. Here, Mrs. Martin.
Joy Ann, I hate formality. Who are you?
Well, I'm from the insurance company, here to find out whether you killed your husband or not.
Good for you, Mr. Dollar. That's what I like. Men who get right down to the point. I was told you were here.
Oh? Nobody told me about you.
Come on over and learn. I want to stretch out here in the sun. Here, you man the fly swatter.
Okay.
Come on, sit down. Here beside me. If it gets too warm, slip off your shirt.
Oh, thank you. Well, suppose we start talking business. Marty tells me you sent for him to come here because you were afraid of your husband. How come?
Well, I knew Marty before I knew Loyal. As a matter of fact, he's the one who introduced me to... you call a dead husband?
You call him unlucky, I guess. Anyway, for the purposes of this conversation, I'll know who you mean if you just say husband. But you didn't answer my question. I meant, were you afraid of your spouse? And if so, why?
Yes, I was afraid of him. Oh, I might as well tell you, Mr. Dollar. I want to be frank with you. The only thing Loyal didn't have to offer me was love. I seem to be a girl who needs just that. Frankly, I tried to make up the deficit. Mrs. Tompkins, the housekeeper, saw to it that my husband found out about it. From then on, it was like living with a madman. So endeth my confession.
So beginneth my suspicions. What about this housekeeper?
Well, until I came along, she always thought that Loyal would wind up marrying her. Oh, don't get me wrong. I realize that I'm still the best jury bait around.
If you killed him, you might make some headway with a self-defense plea.
Thanks. I remember that. In the meantime, just in case this thing gets messy for me, and it shows signs, I'm going to spend what's left of my free time enjoying myself.
Well, that won't sound good to a jury, but it sounds good to me. If I spend too much time around here, I might wind up having to plead self-defense myself.
Oh? From me?
No. From that bathing suit. I spent the rest of the afternoon trying to keep two eyes on four people, reading from left to right. Brother Marty stayed in his room finishing his book and his brandy. Nick Bellotti, the bodyguard with no body to guard, got back on his horse and cantered off into the sunset. The joyous widow, Joy Ann, locked herself in her room, and all I could get through the keyhole was the sound of a light and lovely snore. I couldn't tell whether it was the genuine article or not. Having no way of checking, I picked up the trail of Sarah Tompkins, the housekeeper. She, at least, was apparently up to no good. I found her in the library, doing just what Lieutenant Markwood had told her not to do, smearing the surfaces of Mr. Martin's desk with a dust rag. And as anybody knows, you can't fingerprint a dust rag. Hey, cut it out!
How dare you? Mr. Martin's private study.
Those are the police private fingerprints you're messing up.
I was doing nothing of the sort. I was dusting his desk. I always do it at this time of day. Get out of here. You don't belong in here.
Keep your wig on, Mrs. Tompkins.
I'll not be told what to do by outsiders. Everything was all right until outsiders started coming in. If it wasn't for outsiders, Loyal would still be alive. First that girl, then his brother and that detective. Now it's the police and you. Why did any of you have to come here? Why couldn't you leave us alone?
Now, calm down, Mrs. Tompkins. Try to calm down.
And now, what's going on in here? What? Oh, and what are you two lovebirds up to?
It's all right, Lieutenant. I'll tell you about it later.
All right, but get her out of here. I've got some looking to do privately. Take her down to her room and then come back.
You mean you got something hot?
It ain't cold.
Okay, Mrs. Tompkins, come on.
But I haven't finished in there.
Come on, you can get it later. There's just time for you to take a little rest before dinner. Oh,
but I never rest this time of day. He didn't like me to.
Mrs. Tompkins, come on, tell me. Really, why were you wiping off that desk?
Those police this morning scattered white powder all over his desk. He would have been furious with me. He hated any kind of...
The shots had come from the library, and that's where I went, but not fast enough. By the time I got there, Lieutenant Markwood was dead, and whoever had done the shooting was gone, apparently through an open window. Markwood still clutched a shotgun he'd grabbed out of the gun case, but hadn't had a chance to use. Two things had just died in that room, the lieutenant and the hot piece of evidence he'd never had the chance to pass on to me.
In just a moment, we return to the second act of Johnny Dollar. But first, the cream of the wit and the best of the music, which Arthur Godfrey brings you in the daytime on CBS, can now be heard on Godfrey's Digest, a new Saturday evening show heard on most of these same CBS stations. Listen tomorrow night and hear the week's fastest flashes of the Godfrey humor, the top song sung by Jeanette Davis and Bill Lawrence, the finest singing of the Mariners. Arthur Godfrey's Digest and the Goldbergs are the latest addition to CBS's Great Saturday Nights. Now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Hey, what happened?
Oh, Markwood.
Yeah, he's dead.
Well... what are you doing, Sauer?
I'm looking for what there seems to be a shortage of around here, Bellotti. Clues.
You don't mind where you look, do you? Rule number one, don't get caught frisking dead cops.
Forget about it, Bellotti, will you? Maybe I can suffer from lapse of memory for you sometime.
That's a deal. Got any idea what you're looking for?
No. But whatever it was,
It was important enough to get him killed. I'd hoped maybe there'd be something in his notebook, for instance.
Any luck?
Well, very little. It's a brand new book, only one notation in it. Here it is. Check tattooing diameter. Recheck penetration. What do you make of that?
It's too scientific for me. I'm a skip case and divorce type detective myself. All I know is you'd better put that book back in his pocket and leave it there.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Nice timing, Bilotti, and remember, thanks for the loss of memory.
Forget it.
Hey, what happened? What's going on here?
Oh, good Lord. Lieutenant Markport. Who did it?
Dealer's choice. So far, the dealer's the only one who knows.
First my brother, now Lieutenant Markwood. There'll be real trouble about this.
Johnny, shall I call the police?
Drop the innocent access for law. I'll call them.
No, maybe I better do it, Marty.
If everybody will stop pleading not guilty by wanting to call the police, I'd like to get a word in. The police have already been called. Now, if you'll get out of here, I'd like to try earning my salary. If I had had longer ears and more soulful eyes, I would have been all bloodhound, because I could sniff out the first of the trail. The smell of cordite told me that Lieutenant Markwood's killer had either been inside the room when he fired or just outside with the weapon pointed through the still open window. Outside, the grass formed a deep, wet rug right up to the house and smothered any immediate hopes I'd had of finding footsteps. But 10 feet away, I had better luck. A ray of light from inside spotlighted something that looked like it might be a star witness. It was a .32 caliber revolver. I scooped it up with my handkerchief and went back through the open window to look it over. Under the light, I checked 6 empty chambers and a crimson smear on the walnut grip. If somebody was feeding me a herring, it sure was red. But it wasn't blood. It was lipstick.
I'd like to introduce myself, Dollar. I'm Sergeant Norrin McDougal.
How are you, Sergeant?
Poor Markwood. Thank the Lord he didn't have any wife and kids.
I'm glad to hear that. Cops usually do.
Well, that's one good thing about it. When a police officer goes, there's plenty of them that lives on to fight back. All the police in the world.
You can throw in the private ones, too, Sergeant.
Thanks, Dollar. And now maybe I'd better take your statement.
Well, it won't take long. I heard the shots from the hallway and I came back. He was killed either from inside the room or just outside the window. I didn't get a look at the killer, but I found what might be the murder gun. Here it is. Now, watch that handkerchief.
.32 caliber.
Yeah, how does that match up with the gun that killed old man Martin, do you know?
Same caliber.
Uh-huh.
Huh. I wonder what he was doing with his shotgun. It ain't loaded, and Markwood knew better than to wave an unloaded gun in the face of a full one.
Did you get anything else out of ballistics, Sergeant?
Headache. Dollar, what we got from ballistics don't add up with what we got from autopsy.
Well, how's that?
Those two slugs ended Martin's body 1.5 inches apart. But, according to the shallow penetration, they were fired from a distance of 300 yards. Now, do you know anybody who could do that kind of shooting with a .32?
Well, that's pretty fancy shooting. Could it have been done with a stationary mount?
No, not a chance. The body would have started falling after the first shot, and you can't re-aim a stationary mount that fast.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I didn't have a chance to spend much time with Markwood before he got it, so I don't have much to work on. You got anything to spare?
Just a lot of routine confusion so far. You know yourself, Dollar. You take 4 witnesses, you're bound to get at least 2 different stories. Now, 2 of the people that heard the shooting when Martin got killed last night said they heard 2 shots. The other 2 ear witnesses said they heard 1. The only thing the whole 4 agree on is that they didn't see anything.
Well, that sounds familiar. Thanks anyway, Sergeant.
Sure, anytime. Hey, Sam.
Yeah?
Take this gun into town. Tell ballistics to run it through for fingerprints and check it against those slugs in the Martin case. I want to report right away.
I hitched a ride with that gun into the ballistics department. While waiting for the test to be made, I asked some questions and I came up with a real brain buster. Despite the fact that the penetration report said that Martin had been shot from a distance of 300 yards, his skin and clothing had been tattooed with powder, indicating the shots had been fired at close range. The tree that little puzzler put me up would have made the giant redwood forest look like a hedge. Then they gave me the ballistic report. The lands and grooves scored into the slugs by the revolver barrel proved that both Loyal Martin and Lieutenant Markwood had been killed by the .32 caliber gun I'd picked up in the yard. No prints on it. Registered owner, the young lady who looked much better in a bathing suit than she'd ever look in the electric chair. The widow, Joyanne Martin. The Hartford Hawkshaw. Dollar, I want to talk to you.
Oh, I'll be with you in a second. I'm just out of the shower.
Okay. First she was in the pool, now it's the shower. She's also in plenty of hot water.
Hi. Don't pay any attention to my hair.
Don't worry, I won't.
I suppose you think it's a silly time of night for me to be taking a shower, but I thought it might help me to get to sleep.
Well, I'm afraid I won't.
Why, Johnny.
You were pretty careless with that gun, weren't you?
What gun?
Oh, that handy little .32 caliber gun with the handy little registration number engraved on it that told the nasty old police that you bought it 6 weeks ago.
Well, my gun's right here in the drawer. I bought it to protect myself from my husband. Johnny. It's gone.
It's real gone. It's done gone and killed two men so far. And if you can't do some fast talking and some fast proving, it stands a good chance of shortening your pretty little life expectancy.
But somebody must have stolen it.
Oh, no. That's not even a down payment on a story.
Oh, but, Johnny, there's a whole house full of people who could have done it. Not only that, they'd be glad to get me out of the way if they could.
Why?
Well, Mrs. Thompson, because she hates me. Hoyle's brother, Marty, because I stand to inherit everything.
What about Nick Bellotti? Doesn't he have an axe to grind?
I don't know what it could be.
Okay, skip it. Tell me, do you remember hearing two shots being fired around here any time before your husband was killed? Probably away from the house?
Why do you ask that?
Because I want to know, did you?
You amaze me. Yes, I did hear two shots. The day before Loyal was killed. I was horseback riding down by the Walnut Grove. I remember because my horse shied.
Well, this is coming a bit too readily to be readily believed. But how big is that Walnut Grove?
Not very big.
Yeah? Can you spot those shots a little closer?
Well, they sounded as if they came from about the middle. I didn't stay to find out. I guess I frightened easily.
Yeah. Yeah, you frightened me easily.
Why, Johnny?
Why? I'll tell you why. Because whether you shot anybody or not, you're a murder baby.
Oh, Johnny, I didn't kill them. Got to believe me, Johnny.
I don't have to. But just for a minute, I will. What is there about police drivers? Even out in the country, they got to lay on those sirens.
Johnny, please.
Come on, you better get dressed, sweetheart. I told them I'd keep you occupied till they got here.
Why, you...
The police took Joyanne and her hurt feelings off to the pokey. I took myself and my hurt cheek off to bed. The next thing I had to do had to be done by daylight. So I took over Joyanne's painfully empty and prettily perfumed sack, set the alarm for dawn, and snort up a storm. I never knew before how much went on in the country so early in the morning. On the way to the Walnut Grove, the damp air washed the cobwebs out of my head, and I started thinking. Now, first, Royal Martin had been found dead with two bullet holes in him, yet two of the witnesses, Joyanne and the housekeeper, Mrs. Tompkins, had heard only one shot. Second, that powder burn tattooing on the body, denoting a close-range killing, was in violent argument with a bullet penetration report which screamed long-range killing. Those facts, added to what was in Lieutenant Markwood's notebook, plus that shotgun clutched in his dead hand, came close to tallying up the total that had cost him his life. Inside the grove, I found four walnut trees with hollows in their trunks. The first one gave me a handful of nuts and a fancy sassing by an irate squirrel. The second one came up with a handful of spunk water and a wet cuff. And the third,
I found what I was looking for.
I found about 2 pecks of clean cotton waste. That is, clean, except for some powder burns. Everything was falling into place, including a blunt instrument which hit me on the head from behind. But before I hit the ground, I saw Brother Marty Martin legging it back towards the house. I made it up the house, and into, up the hill and onto the trail. And was just starting up the stairs when I heard another out-of-season 4th of July.
It's okay, Dollar. I got him.
Yeah. Yeah. So I see.
It was self-defense. I had to do it.
I hated to butt in on your case, but all of a sudden everything stacked up and I knew he was your man.
When I threw it in his teeth, he made a try for his gun, so I dropped him.
You sure did, Bilotti. Well, I owe you a lot of thanks. But if you don't mind, I'll take over from here.
Sure, help yourself.
Good. And I think the first thing you'd better do is hightail it into town, get your story filed with the police.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You're all straight now, so you can back me up.
100%, Nick, all the way. Now get going. Come on.
Okay, Donna, see you later.
Sergeant Norrin McDougal.
Yes, sir. Sergeant McDougal.
Johnny Dollar, Sergeant.
Oh, yeah, Dollar. What's new?
Well, just another corpse. And in just about 15 minutes, the guy who made it one and conspired on the other 2 killings is going to walk right into your arms through the station house door.
What? Who is it?
Nick Bilotti, New York private license. He just shot his partner in this thing, Marty Martin.
Oh, you're crazy. What about this girl? It was her gun.
That was their fondest hope, Sergeant, to pin it on her. They borrowed her gun, fired 2 slugs from it into some cotton waste, and took the slugs and stuck them in a shotgun shell. 1 shot, just like both ladies said they heard. The shotgun Lieutenant Markwood was looking at when he died was really the Martin murder weapon.
Oh, that takes care of the powder burns and the shallow penetration, yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Dollar. I'll be waiting for him. Hey, wait a minute. What's he walking in here for under his own power?
To tell you an early morning bedtime story, just before you go off duty. He'll give you a pitch about a self-defense killing. It's a lie. The victim wasn't carrying a gun. If he had been, he would have used it on me. But he didn't. He used a sap. The sap. Expense account. Items 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. $624 entertainment. Appeasing a rich widow with rich taste. Expense account, items 1 through 13 inclusive, $160, entertainment of poor insurance investigator with extravagant taste. Expense account, item 14, $7.80 mileage, New York to Hartford. You may disagree with that item, claiming that I finished the case in Fairfield County, but I didn't finish the case until I left her. And New York City is where I left her. Expense account total, $823. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd, with music composed and conducted by Leif Stephen. Edmund O'Brien can currently be seen starring in the Harry M. Popkin United Artists production, DOA. Featured in our cast were Irene Tedrow, Walter Burke, Ted DeCorsia, John Daner, Gene Bates, and Ed Begley. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. Join us again next week when Edmund O'Brien returns in another adventure of...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. ¶¶
Ladies and gentlemen, CBS invites you to hear Senator Brian McMahon on the Capitol cloakroom over most of these same Columbia stations tomorrow night. Senator McMahon is chairman of the Joint Congressional Committee on Atomic Energy. And when he's interviewed by CBS newsmen Eric Severide, Bill Shadell, and Griffin Bancroft, this will be the first detailed discussion of the hydrogen bomb and its implications. Remember, the first discussion by a high government official since President Truman's historic announcement earlier this week. Remember, that CBS's Capitol Cloakroom, tomorrow night at 10:30 p.m. over most of these same CBS stations. Be sure and be listening. This is CBS, where, incidentally, Arthur Godfrey's digestive wit and humor is also heard every Saturday night. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, spanned 14 years and ended up being the last dramatic show on network radio. One of the vicarious pleasures of Johnny Dollar's adventures is each one is set in a new location. This episode has him going undercover at a steel mill in Pittsburgh. Enjoy Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Dead First Helpers, first broadcast April 11th, 1950 on CBS.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Bill Hudson, Johnny. Grand Industrial Assurance. Remember?
How could I forget? Whose assembly line busted down this time?
It's steel, Johnny. Cornell Steel, Pittsburgh. Lots of so-called accidental deaths in the open hearth furnaces. Frankly, it smacks of murder to me.
Could be hot work. I'll bring my sweatshirt. When's the next plane for Smokeville?
Edmund O'Brien in another transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Great Industrial Assurance Corporation of America, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during investigation of the dead first helpers. Expense account item one, $83.24 plane fare to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a land of chimneys and open hearth furnaces where I met Supervisor Joel Barrett.
Five men in a single month, Mr. Dollar. All of them first helpers.
What's a first helper?
Well, it goes like this. The melter foreman is in charge of a number of furnaces. The first helper is in charge of an individual furnace. Under him are the second helpers and the cinder snaps.
I see. Well, how did the deaths occur?
In a number of ways. One man tumbled down a flight of stairs. Two were killed by a crane magnet. Another one fell from the pouring platform. And just last week, one of our best men was killed in an explosion of a hot cap mold.
You better explain that one.
Certain types of steel have to be capped after they've been poured from the ladle to the ingot, you see. Sometimes the pressure is so great inside of them that when the pourers shoot water on the cap to seal it, the cap flies off and sprays a man with molten steel. I've seen it happen only once, Mr. Dollar. That's enough for me.
Any connection between these deaths?
How do you mean?
I mean any common denominator, anything that could provide a motive for murder.
None that I know of. Except for the fact that all the men had been with us for a long time, 15 or 20 years.
Just the boys who know their way around, eh?
That's what's so strange, Mr. Dollar. None of them have ever been found to ignore safety regulations. How do you plan on proceeding?
Well, it's been my experience that plant investigation from the outside is pretty often a waste of time. The men are on their guard.
You want to go right to work in the shop?
What did you say they call the lowest man on the open hearth furnace?
Cindersnap.
Well, you break out the overalls, Mr. Barrett. We'll see how good I am at snapping cinders. Expense account item two, 25 cents for work cap. Every other item of equipment provided by the company. Expense account item three, $1 for blister salve and adhesive tape for hands after first 8 hours of work. Expense account item four, 75 cents for liniment for back after second 8 hours of work. Expense account item five, $10 first union fees, United Steelworkers CIO. Footnote, the fourth day on the job is the hardest.
Dollar!
Yeah!
Silicon!
What?
Silicon! Wheelbarrow, come on!
Right!
Move!
Dollar!
Yeah!
Routine was a killer, but more and more I felt myself becoming a part of the making of steel. It's really something to watch the straight white-hot steam pound into the ingot molds from the ladles. And I began to know these men whom you never hear about, the men with the big backs and the soaking red bandanas around their waists, like Andre with a funny last name, who got a kick out of helping me along.
It's all right, Dollar. You get the swing of it. It's not half so hard like you think. After a while, you get strong, get tough like nails.
Oh, my aching back.
Bet you never eat so good, huh? Bet you never sleep so good.
Oh, I dream about lime-silicon ratios.
You want to see turn tomorrow?
Yeah, if you mean the midnight shift, yeah.
Good, you be with me. I show you lots of things.
Well, I don't mind the work, but frankly, I'm scared.
You work good. They no fire you.
It's not that, Andre. I mean cranes and scrap cars and ladles of steel, 3,000 degrees hot.
You learn how to go around. You have no trouble. You remember the rule, you have no trouble. You'll be fine.
Maybe. But some of the boys were saying that 5 men died in the last month. And boys that should know how to get around. Right, Andre?
Accident always happen. Fools, the old ones, they are the careless ones. They know. They think they know so well the rule, and they slip and poof.
Yeah, you said it. Poof. But sometimes it isn't so easy to make friends in a steel mill. Sometimes, no matter how hard you try, you know that you've lived too soft a life to ever get information from a steel man like Joe Poland. I found him in the company cafeteria.
Where do you come?
Chicago.
You no look Chicago.
What do I look?
You look from office building. Where you was before?
Office building.
Your hand like baby, soft like milk. How'd they take you?
Guess I've got an honest face.
What?
Skip it. Eat your soup. It's getting cold. Kirk Brody.
What you say?
Nothing. Just Kirk Brody.
Kirk Brody. How you know Kirk Brody? He dead when you come.
I know. Killed by a hot cap mold.
Kirk Brody friend. I like him. Work good.
Who was working with him, Joe?
Masaloni.
Glad it wasn't me. I'd hate to have that on my conscience.
You nosy. You maybe work for Barrett. Barrett. Blech. Guy don't like.
Finish your soup, Joe. It's getting cold.
Yeah.
But then there was Fred, another first helper, who helped me understand the general feeling about Mr. Barrett.
You'll learn what it's like, Dollar. You married?
Not yet.
Well, if you were married and maybe had a couple of kids, you'd find out. You'd lie awake at night and you'd wonder, will it be me? Will I get that blue slip tomorrow? What if something happened to me? Would she get anything from the insurance? Things like that.
How long you been here?
5 years. And tomorrow they can say, that's all, friend. And where are you?
You sound like you know your way around, Fred. What's your idea on these accidents?
Accidents? There's no such thing as an accident, Dollar. People who want to live cross the street with the light. It's the same way in steel. Like Kirk Brody, killed last week.
I decided to pay Kirk Brody's widow a call. But there was so little to go on, I had nothing to lose. She lived in a cold water flat. There was still a black wreath in the door.
Yes?
Mrs. Brody?
That's right.
I wonder if I could see you for a moment. I'm with Cornell Steel.
Come in. Won't you sit down?
Thanks. My name is Dollar. I'm investigating the accidents that occurred in the open hearths, Mrs. Brody. I'm sorry to trouble you about it, but there are some things I have to know.
Kirk was the last one.
It happened 3 weeks ago, is that right?
Yeah. 3 weeks ago, Tuesday.
On the accident report, it said he was killed when a hot cap blew off a mold.
I knew it would happen, Mr. Dollar. I knew it would happen. It was as if I could have stopped it. Oh, Kirk was always careful, always. Only that day when he left the house, I had a feeling something was going to happen. I said, Kirk, please be careful. He smiled. It was the last I saw.
I won't trouble you any further, Mrs. Brody.
Oh, no. I want to tell you what's happening, Mr. Dollar. I'll tell you what it is. It was this way with Kirk. It's this way with the others. It's their jobs. They're scared for their jobs. You want to investigate. You want to investigate Barrett. He's the one to investigate.
Huh.
Hope nobody saw you come in here.
Nobody did, Barrett.
What'd you find out?
Well, nothing you could call factual, but there's some kind of tension in the shop. Something's going on.
Well, production is holding its own.
No, they work all right. But it's like they're frightened of something. I want to look at your employment records.
Well, sure thing. Right in that file drawer.
Thanks.
You know, it certainly is odd, Dollar. Every one of the men killed was alone at the time. No witnesses at all.
Oh, really? That's something you neglected to tell me on my first visit here, Mr. Barrett.
Slipped my mind.
Yeah, it seems several other things slipped your mind.
What do you mean?
Well, like a little communication I found on the bulletin board in the locker room.
What communication?
To the effect that due to various conditions beyond our control, layoffs will be necessary in some cases, and men will be laid off consistent with their seniority.
But now, what possible connection could that have with the five deaths?
You had the answer to that question, but I had to find it out on my own. I don't call that active cooperation, Mr. Barrett.
What's that,
The five men were killed in order of seniority. The killer, whoever he is, obviously is scared to death of losing his job. According to your files, the next man slated for accidental death is another first helper, Mike Baroldi. Now, you knew all that. Why didn't you speak up?
Well, I don't know. It never hit me as particularly important.
You know Cornell Steel isn't laying off anybody right now. Maybe you're trying to scare the men into more work. And I doubt if that's company policy, Mr. Barrett.
You have your job to do, Dollar. That's to find this killer. I have my job to do. That's to boost production. Is that all right with you?
Perfectly all right. And I'll take my job any day.
Mike!
Yeah?
Come here.
What?
The delay clerk, Shanny.
Okay.
I just block her with manganese for the tap, Dollar. I can't waste no time.
Look, this won't take long. Mike, you're on somebody's death list. You know that?
What are you talking about?
I'm with the plant insurance company investigating the five deaths that occurred here in the last month. According to my figures, you're next.
Ah, cut it out.
It's not just a matter of accident, Mike. It's murder. You're the highest man in the shop in seniority outside of the Melter foreman. Somebody is knocking off the top of the list one by one. So just watch your step.
I believe it when I see it.
When you see it, Mike, it's going to be too late. That night, toward the end of the shift, must have been about 6 a.m, Mike was cleaning cinders from the furnace floor on the tap hole side. I was making it my business to keep an eye on him. He was sweeping the cinders off the platform down into the empty ladle pit 30 feet below. As a first helper, it wasn't his job, but Mike was like that. Suddenly, from the other side of the furnace came the huge figure of a man, an asbestos cloak and hood over his head and body. Mike turned, and a look of terror came into his face. I started for him, but too late. Whoever it was picked Mike up, held him aloft for a split second, and hurled him to his death.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. But first, to politely paraphrase history, George burns while Gracie fiddles. And the result is, of course, the laugh riot heard every Wednesday evening over most of these same CBS stations. George and Gracie are two of America's best purveyors of nonsense and two neighbors everyone enjoys visiting. You can never tell what Gracie has up her sleeve, but you can always bet it'll get George into trouble. Be sure not to miss the Burns and Allen Show this Wednesday and every Wednesday at that spot on your dial marked CBS. And now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
They gathered around the body of Mike Baroldi and I gave chase to the killer. It was like running after a brown ghost. He ducked up the aisle between furnaces and hopped gingerly over the coupling of a train of coal scrap. I wasn't so lucky. I climbed up, but my foot got caught in the coupling guide, and I fell on my face. The next thing I remember, I was in the plant inspector's office. He was dismayed. He took one gander at my noggin and launched into Lecture 1A of the safety inspector's manual.
And look at this one. Another example. Look at his head.
You're lucky to be alive. What rule did you break?
Section 3, Code 2.
Don't you be funny with me. You know, I could have you fired, you know.
I'll bet you could. What have you found out about Mike Baroldi?
I filled in a full report. The poor man fell over the railing while cleaning the platform.
Not quite.
What?
He was pushed.
Pushed? Who pushed him?
I don't know. The killer had an asbestos cloak and hood over him.
A killer? This is worse than I thought.
You got a skeleton key to the lockers? I want to see Mike's belongings.
Look, just who do you think you are?
I'm with the Grand Insurance Company, mister. You give me the key and I think we can have this thing straightened out in no time. He was so stunned, he sent me to the open hearth production office where I got a key. The locker room was empty. I went to Mike Baroldi's locker first. I found his wallet with a pass to the plant in it and $3 in cash. There was a picture of a woman holding a baby. I put the wallet back, looked through the inside pocket of his coat, empty. I closed the locker and started a methodical search of each locker in the place. About two-thirds down the first row, I came to a locker labeled André Lemaire. I opened it and found what I was looking for, an asbestos cloak and hood. There had been a tear on the sleeve of the cloak worn by the man who had killed Mike Baroldi. I took the cloak with me, locked up, and walked down the aisle to the door. Somebody was coming in just as I was coming out. It was Joe, Big Joe Poland.
What you do here, Nosey?
Aren't you supposed to be at work?
I feel sick.
Where's André?
André work.
Number 10?
Like always, number 10. You nosy fella.
I get nosier. Did you ever see this asbestos cloak before?
Sure. It used to blow out top hole when they put out new heat.
You seen it lately? Like on somebody?
Sure. André, he have on coat.
When?
Before.
Before what?
I don't know. Before.
All right, thanks, Joe. See you later.
Yeah. You tell André Joe sick, Joe go home.
I'll tell him, Joe.
Hey, wait. Inspector say Mike Baroldi push from rail.
That's right.
How he know?
I told him.
How you know?
I saw it.
You see André push Mike, huh?
What makes you think it was André?
André bad fella. He don't like this Mike. Always make trouble for this Mike.
And you don't like André?
Sure I don't like André. Why you think I tell you?
Did you see André?
I see him go to furnace where Mike is. Stomach too big.
You go on home, Joe. You don't look so good. As far as I was concerned, there were two main possibilities, two big boys. One was Joe Poland. The other was André Lemaire. I stuck the asbestos cloak that I found in André's locker in the production office where I could get to it later. The sun had come up, and André was standing there enjoying the fresh air before going down to the locker room.
Hello, Della. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it is.
It's a beautiful day. That man should have to bury himself in his dirt and filth when all the world is so beautiful. That is the shame, no?
Yeah, that's right, André. You going home now?
Yeah, I go home now, yes. Oh, I have wonderful suggestion. Wonderful suggestion. You come home with me, huh? We have good French meal. You like good French food?
Yeah, sounds great. Your wife won't mind?
Sure she mind, but who cares for the wife? Ah, come.
What's your name, monsieur?
Johnny Dollar.
Funny name.
Ah, you have no sense. Woman, you do not tell a man he has funny name.
Oh, I'm sorry, monsieur.
Oh, think nothing of it.
You work at mill?
That's right.
You'll make a wonderful worker, a very good man, because he know, he think, he use his head. Oh, I forget, Marie. The most terrible thing has happened.
What?
You know Mac Baroldi. Mac, tall, long, thin, little hair. Well, Mike is pushed from rail and killed.
Oh, no.
Kill. Oh, terrible, terrible. You see it, no, Dollar?
Yeah, I saw it.
Somebody do it. Somebody. They catch him, boy.
André, I think it's about time I let you in on a little secret. I'm with an insurance company. I'm investigating these murders. I found an asbestos cloak in your locker today.
I have no asbestos cloak.
I saw Mike killed, André. The killer wore this cloak. The cloak was in your locker. Maybe you'd better take it from there.
You say I killed Mike? You tell me this? I take you to my house? You say terrible things to me like this? You lie to me. You say you're a friend of mine. You leave. You leave. Leave!
Well, there goes some nice French cooking. Expense account, item 6, 25 cents for coffee and donuts at a corner cafe. I kicked myself a couple of times for breaking out the evidence before I should have. Then I went back to the open hearth office. Barrett had just arrived. He greeted me with a frown that reminded me of the last conversation we'd had.
Well, Dollar, have you found anything else?
You heard what happened early this morning?
About Mike, yes. I thought you had it all figured out.
Well, I still haven't. I chased the killer across the shop, but he got away.
I see.
No, you don't see. He had an asbestos cloak and hood over him.
Pretty clever fella.
Yeah, and pretty big. I've got it narrowed down, but that doesn't help much.
I suppose you've come to look through the files again, just so you can tell who's going to be killed next?
Maybe it'll be different this time, Mr. Barrett. I think I'll just take that seniority list with me, if I may. I'm going to go home and get some sleep.
How do you like the night shift?
It's anything but dull, Mr. Barrett. I'll see you later. Expense account, item 7, $1 even, cab fare to boarding house, to which a surprise taxi driver chauffeured his first overalled customer in what must have been years. Did I study the list in the cab? I did not. I grabbed a little sleep. The driver shook me awake. I paid him, went upstairs, and flopped in the cot. Then I opened the paper. The next name on the list was none other than André Lemaire. Expense account, item 8, 75 cents taxi fare. I got to André's in 10 minutes. I was 20 minutes too late. The police were out front.
Dead. He's dead. They killed him.
Who killed him, Mrs. Lemaire?
Killed him. Killed him.
Who? Who, Mrs. LeMayer?
The man, the big man. He killed him.
Sergeant, take care of him. I'm sorry, Mrs. LeMayer. Expense account item 8, cab fare to plant. I tried to tell myself that there was nothing I could have done, that everything had pointed to André. But I'd seen his name on the seniority list, right below Mike Baroldi's. I'd drawn too many conclusions. It was clear now. The asbestos cloak in André's locker had been a frame. Maybe insurance investigators shouldn't make mistakes, but they do. And sometimes, fatal ones. I could lay the blame for André's death on nobody but myself. Myself and a big first helper named Joe Polan. Where is Polan, Barrett?
Why, I don't know. He got sick. We sent him home.
What's his address?
I have it right here in my book.
Well, bring it with you. You and I are paying a visit to Joe Polan.
I hope you have a gun, Dollar.
Just in case.
A knock.
You better stand back.
Yeah.
Mrs. Polan?
Yeah?
Is your husband home?
No.
We're from the mills. This is Mr. Barrett.
Huh?
Where can we find your husband, Mrs. Polan?
He's not home.
Mind if we come in and see?
He's not home. Go away. He's not
home. I'm sorry, Mrs. Polan. We'll have to make sure.
You stop.
You try that door, Barrett.
I think you'd better try it.
You
now.
Go.
Right.
You go. I call police.
He's not here, Barrett.
He's not home. I told you, he's not home.
Mrs. Polan, you may not know it, but your husband is wanted for murder.
Murders.
Yeah. Now, come on. Tell us where he is.
You from Mills? I tell you nothing.
Look, Mrs. Pullen, be reasonable.
Reasonable. You be reasonable. 5 kids. Be reasonable. This place be reasonable. Mills be reasonable. Barrett. You go. I call police.
Come on, Barrett. You must have a peculiar theory of management, Barrett. I've been in dozens of plants, and I've never seen anybody loved like you are. What do you do to them?
My theory of management is very simple. Men work better when the pressure's on. There it is, cruel but true. I have the top production result in the plant. You can't beat that.
How did you ever get off a bookkeeper's stool and into a mill? How did you ever get to be a supervisor? I'd like to meet the man that hired you.
I give you 10 days as a supervisor in the steel mills, Dollar. You'd change your opinions fast. Men are no different now than they ever were. Give them an inch, they take a mile. Give them 5 minutes off, they take an hour. Let them out of your sight for a minute, and they're playing cards in a corner.
You know, men are more than figures on a production chart. Could that be why you lost a lot of good first helpers, Barrett?
One maniac runs loose, and you condemn the whole method. Sorry, Dollar. You've got a lot to learn about the practical management. You'd better just stick to investigation.
And from the way you've messed this case up, I'd say you were the one who had a lot to learn in his field.
We rode back to the plant without a word. It wasn't just anger. There was so much difference between us, there was just nothing to say. Barrett got off and said he'd call the police if I had proof that Joe Poland was the killer. I said I didn't have any proof and for him to call the police anyhow. I took the stairs to the furnace floor. I knew Poland would be there. I don't know how I knew, I just knew. I wandered from furnace shanty to furnace shanty. I found him at number 12. He was cleaning out the clay of the tap hole before the pour. Joe?
Yeah?
Take off the hood.
What?
Come on, Joe. It's all over.
Dollar! No good, Dollar. Nobody take job away from Joe. You see the list? I on top of list now, Dollar. I top of list. Now nobody take job away. My kids, my wife, they be good now. No live bad. I get big raise now. I top of list. But it's no fire me, huh?
Stay away, Joe. Joe, I'll shoot. Second, he stopped him. Then he came at me again, as steady as before. The small trickles of blood started down his chest. Stop, Joe! His leg this time. He gripped it once, then let go. There was no expression of pain on his face, just determination. I was the last man in his way. After I was gone, he had a clear road to security.
You don't stop
then
me,
he was
Dollar.
On me, his huge hands gripping
Dollar,
my throat.
I
below
don't
me, I could feel the
sea
of freshly poured steel bubbling in his face.
You don't stop
then I
me,
shot
Dollar.
Again. Close quarters this time, and right for the heart. Slowly, the hands relaxed. The huge body slumped over the railing and fell. There was a hiss and puff of steam. I stood up. My legs were trembling under me. I looked down, shielding my face. There was nothing to see. The slag had covered over. Expense account item 9, $20.53. Flowers for Joe Poland's funeral. They buried a block of steel in place of his body. Barrett was standing there, standing to one side, and Mrs. Poland and Mrs. Brody and Mrs. LeMayer. When the minister finished his little speech, Mrs. Poland turned to Barrett. I've never seen hate like that in anyone's eyes.
Murderer. You killed him. You killed him, Barrett. You killed them all. You still kill them. They'll all die of your
come on,
someday,
Mrs. Poland.
Murderer.
Come on, that isn't going to
murderer!
Happen. Come on now.
Oh, murderer!
Madame Poland, I'm Marie Lemaire. Let me take you home.
So Mrs. Poland went home with the woman whose husband Joe had killed. And I wondered, who are the murderers and where does murder start? Though I don't like to see anyone lose his job, I like petty Simon Legrees even less. So I'm pleased to report that Joel Barrett has been replaced as supervisor. I finally concluded that if you trace a murder far enough, you get right back to anonymous. Expense account total $520.25. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien and was written by Gil Dowd and David Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Edmund O'Brien can currently be seen starring in the Harry M. Popkin United Artists production, DOA. Featured in our cast were Joe Forte, Junius Matthews, Jack Petruzzi, Raymond Burr, Jack Crucian, Kay Stewart, and Peggy Weber. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. Join us again next week when, from Hollywood, Edmund O'Brien will return in another transcribed adventure of...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
C CBS will go right on bringing you Dr. Christian every Wednesday night over most of these same stations, along with Bing, Groucho, and George and Gracie. Stay tuned now for The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where Wednesday night is Bing Crosby night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying, so long for a while.